this show is going to be one of the best shows I've ever done. First of all, Joe Terranova is coming on today, and he's going to talk about why he wants to focus on quality and momentum as the two most important factors when he's looking at stocks and when he's building portfolios. Joe is the chief market strategist at Virtus, which is a publicly traded asset management firm with over $100 billion invested with them. And Joe is the man, in case you didn't know. You've probably seen him on CNBC. You may have heard him on this podcast last time. He's the best.
Welcome to The Compound Show with Downtown Josh Brown. Josh is the CEO of Ritholtz Wealth Management. All opinions expressed by Josh or any podcast guest are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Ritholtz Wealth Management. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for investment decisions. Clients of Ritholtz Wealth Management may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
Okay, we're here with Joe Terranova, Chief Market Strategist at Virtus Investment Partners. Joe, what's going on?
Josh, how are you?
I'm okay, but you? It's an unbelievable day for you. You have an ETF launched based on an index that you created, and people are really excited about it. Are you excited?
I'm excited about the index for sure. By the way, I'm also very excited about the performance of your book. Let's not fail to mention that.
That is just
a treasure to the investment community, and the pre-sale is going fantastic. So congratulations to you.
Very nice of you. I appreciate it. So first of all, before we even get into the index, which we're definitely going to get into because I'm really excited about it, I think you're doing this in a very new and novel way. And a lot of people are going to want to know about this. Can we just talk about the market?
Sure.
So I'm going to hit you. I want to run something by you. And
Okay. Don't
jump in until I'm finished, but I want to get your reaction. All right?
Okay.
And I'm going to do a lot of the heavy lifting here. So if people get mad at my take, it's not your fault. It's my fault. All right?
That's okay.
All right. Let me run this down for you. Low tax rates, low interest rates, at least for the next year. The Fed out to lunch. No sign of inflation. Two of the big four coming vaccines showing 90% efficacy in blocking the virus. U.S. dollar index down 8% since the March high. The 10 and 2-year Treasury yield spread up 100% year to date after inverting last summer. Earnings are now growing. Estimates are rising into 2021. They're going to talk about fiscal stimulus again this January and February. Homeowners' equity record highs, home values record highs, monthly new home building starts, October numbers, challenging the 07 highs. Almost every mortgage holder and corporation in America got to refinance their loans at rates approaching 0% this year. And there was no corporate debt blow up, no credit card blow up, no housing crash. Yesterday, 89% of S&P 500 stocks got back above their 200-day moving average. That's the highest reading since 2014. Now, 52-week highs, MSCI China, MSCI Emerging Markets, Vanguard FTSE Europe, MSCI Japan, racing toward a 30-year high. So Joe, tell me, how in this environment, give me one good reason why or how we don't have an absolute melt-up into year-end for the S&P 500. I'm going to take a sip of water. You tell me.
Take a sip of water. And amazingly, which is a surprise to all of us, I think you left something out that's also a wild card. We've got these things called tariffs that are currently in place.
Gone.
Right. What do we think that the direction of those tariffs are going to be? They're certainly not going to be to raise them. So I suspect we're going to lower the tariffs or vacate them completely, which is very powerful for corporate margins and for consumer spending. So what you have communicated in a very effective way is that for everyone that is listening to this call, you need to continue to be invested. And the mannerism in which you're invested, everyone can figure that out with their advisor, on their own, however they choose to do it, but you have to be invested.
So the only negatives are the ones that have been with us forever, like the debt, the deficit. Okay, they were here 5 years ago, 10 years ago, they'll be here 10 years from now. There's no way out of that. And then there are the negatives that none of us are thinking of, which you could put like coronavirus into that basket. Like, those are the negatives. The ones you can't think of and the ones that are always here. What else?
One more.
Okay.
Expectations.
Oh, are we too bullish already?
No. We seem to think that the equity market specifically is some form of an entitlement, okay? That when we invest, we're going to realize returns like we've experienced over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And I think that expectation is number one misplaced, and it leads in terms of sentiment to a condition where if you tell the investor, well, you're not going to get your 13% annualized return from the equity market, and your established growth big five tech stocks are not going to give you their 50% on the year, they're kind of like, whoa, wait a second, the market must be going down. No, you might have adequate returns based on the environment that you're describing. So I think we have swings in sentiment, and a lot of it is based upon expectations because of what we've experienced in prior years. I think investors are a little spoiled.
They are spoiled. And this is one of the exercises that we go through with our clients in a flat market year. 2015 comes to mind, 2018. So in 2017, the S&P gave you like 27%. In 2018, down 5% or so. 2019, up 30%. If I would have told you at the start of 17, 3 years, two of them are going to be like 30% and one's going to be flat, or one's going to be down 5%. And I don't know what the order will be. Can you live with that?
I sure can.
What investor would say, no, I'm not taking that deal? Every investor on the planet. So I completely understand what you're saying. We have become spoiled. Let me hit you with a stat. I haven't seen this anywhere. Ben and Mike are working on this behind the scenes right now. We're looking at intra-year drawdowns. The S&P 500 going back to 1928. This year would be the biggest intra-year loss ever where the market finishes positive, assuming we go out positive, which who the hell, you know, it's mid-November. But you talk about spoiled investors. Look how fast they bought that dip, though. The biggest dip. That's how you get spoiled. That's why people's mentality is like this now. So I agree with you.
Spoiled, but also I think in a place where there has to be a strong realization about how important investing really is within your life in terms of achieving the type of happiness that you're looking for. And again, and I'm not just saying this, going back to your book, that's why I believe it is a very powerful tool that you are putting in the investor behavioral toolbox.
It teaches you that. Yeah, I think, you know what? My colleague, Blair, was saying, she was signing some of these books for her clients, I guess our clients, and she was saying, like on each page that she's signing, she's saying the why is more powerful than the what. Like, right. Yeah, of course what you own matters, obviously, but the reason why is probably what's going to help you stay with it. So I think that's a good point you make, Joe. I want to talk about the Terranova U.S. Quality Momentum Index. So I think most of my listeners are familiar with those factors, quality and momentum. They understand conceptually why you would want to screen and rank stocks by those two factors and what they bring to the table for your portfolio. But I've seen both of those interpreted differently by different asset management firms. So for the purposes of the index, the Terranova U.S. Quality Momentum Index, how do you guys define quality?
Well, what we first, if I could begin with, is talk about momentum, because we place a higher degree of emphasis on momentum.
Okay.
And what we try and do, and Josh, I think you and I agree about approaching investments this way, is we try and keep it simple. I think that a lot of people have made an attempt in quantitative models to replicate the brilliance of James Simons. And that's nearly impossible to do, because you're not Jim Simons, so you're not going to be able to replicate that intelligence. So in a very simplistic capacity, we're just looking at momentum relative to the prior 12 months. And what we're doing is we're screening a universe of 500 stocks, and we're narrowing down that universe.
Is the universe S&P 500?
So the universe is large cap U.S. equities based on INDXX. similar to the S&P 500, but index is the provider that we're using, and they're helping us in terms of establish and publishing the index. Similar stocks.
Okay.
Momentum is introduced to narrow those 500 stocks down to 250. So there's a high degree of emphasis on momentum. And what is momentum? Momentum is a technical trend. It's identifying a technical trend. What does it mean when you identify a technical trend? It means you're identifying a high conviction opportunity. Josh, if you were playing basketball, or better yet, the kids are playing basketball, because we know they're better than you at basketball.
More likely.
Okay. So if your son's playing basketball and in the first quarter he takes four shots and he clank, hits the rim on all four, does he want the ball in the second quarter? Probably not so much. Right. But if he gets the ball in the second quarter and he hits a deep three from the corner, you know what? He wants that ball, and he hits the next three shots. He's got confidence. And that's exactly what investors should be identifying. Where is their confidence in the market? That's exactly what momentum does. So momentum narrows you down to 250 equity names, and then we introduce quality.
Okay. You're cutting your universe in half. You're saying we want the top half of the stocks that over the last 12 months have demonstrated the most momentum. Okay. So you're probably avoiding a lot of downtrending stocks, and you're definitely avoiding the 52-week low list.
As example,
please.
The index, no energy.
Right now. It might someday.
Might someday.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Now,
totally get
no
it.
No energy.
Okay. Right. So now you're left with the good half, speaking in terms of price, the good half of the large cap universe. So now we want to take out low quality names within that group. Is that the idea?
Correct.
Okay. How do you define quality?
So we graded upon three criteria: return on equity, debt to equity, and annualized sales growth over the prior 3 years. We screen the 250 stocks, and as you state, we remove 125 based on lower quality.
You're ranking all stocks on each of those three criteria, and the highest scorers remain in this in the fold.
Correct. You create a composite score.
Okay.
125 stocks remain.
Okay.
We equally weight them.
Okay.
And there is your U.S. Quality Momentum Index.
So the typical exposure you'll have in this index to each stock is something like 0.75 basis points-ish at 125 names? Okay.
Somewhere about 0.77.
I worked at Renaissance Technologies. I don't know if you could tell by me running the numbers on that. Okay. Very cool. Now, what sometimes gets people in trouble with momentum strategies in general is they end up extremely exposed to a particular industry group or sector. So how are you guys handling that, if at all?
So the equal weighted nature of it, I suspect, alleviates some of the concerns that one might have as it relates to your question.
Okay.
And I think that kind of removes the risk element where you have an over concentration that is created, or that you place yourself in a position where you have single stock event risk.
Right.
So that's why I emphasize the importance of equal weight, because I think it solves a multitude of what has been complex problems for market cap weighted indexes.
How frequently will the index rebalance? Because obviously when you're dealing with momentum stocks, you are going to have Olympic athletes in that group. Tesla's up 430% this year. I think Zoom is up 600%. So how frequently do you have to cut those back to keep them within that framework of equal weight?
So there's a quarterly rebalance and reconstitution.
Okay.
That is done generally towards the back period of the earnings season. So we get the latest information as it relates to earnings analysis.
Okay.
So you're looking at quarterly rebalances late January, late April, late July, and we obviously just had one in late October that was effective October 30th.
So for the listeners, rebalancing is making sure the components are in the right proportion. Reconstitution is you're going to have names fall out of favor – based on your quantitative analysis, and then you'll have new names that have earned a right to be in this index. So how many names do you think, let's say there's four quarters in a year, so on an annual basis, if you're doing that process regularly, how many names do you think come in and go out, if you had to guess, looking at the past history of the index?
Well, Josh, you and I don't guess at anything, and you know that. So I've studied the prior 12 years. Most recently, we had 21 names that were introduced and 21 names that were removed. In the prior quarter, I was actually rather surprised and happy. We only had 11 additions and 11 names that were removed. I think a lot of the study tends to, because it's embodying 12 years, it tends to a little bit inflate the number. The number tends to push towards around 30 stocks going in and out. But I think the tendency in the most recent years is for there to be less in terms of additions and subtractions. But it's something that I don't know that you could say is going to be consistent moving forward.
So what's interesting, though, is this. So this is going to be fully invested. So there are going to be periods of time where there are very few stocks with what you would genuinely refer to as momentum. But you might have just like the stocks that have gone down the least, and you're comparing them against the universe. And so in let's say, a rough market or a flat market, those might be, for example, consumer staples might be the best momentum stocks. And so that's where the screens would start. I don't think that you would represent this to somebody as a defensive strategy, but that is one aspect of the way that you're ranking things where it could become defensive in a certain market environment. Have you thought about it from that standpoint?
I think that's reasonable. I can appreciate that. I think about this debate that we have currently about growth and value, which I just don't understand, because there seems to be this binary result on growth and value. And I'm not saying this is the solution to that debate. What I am offering is that I think this presents a compelling alternative in the form of a new strategy.
Right. So almost like leave that debate out. Let's look at price action and the quality of the company. And if somebody wants to say, well, that's a value stock, no, it's a growth stock, I really don't care what it is. It's going up and it's generating cash flow without a lot of debt. And you could call it whatever you could say it's a Martian stock. I don't care. I love that. Right. I really do. Okay. The last thing I want to ask you, how do you see advisors? A lot of my listeners are financial advisors, family office people, et cetera. How do you see them using the ETF that's just come out? I guess, did it come out today?
It did.
Okay. I know you're not allowed to talk about it. I am, because we're not marketing ETFs on this show. But the ticker is JOT, because this is the Terra Nova Quality Momentum Index, or Momentum Quality. Which the order?
U.S. Quality Momentum Index.
U.S. Quality Momentum. All right. So the ETF based on this, which Virtus launched.
By the way, you agree with that. Now, we emphasize momentum more than quality, but momentum quality just didn't sound good.
No, you got it right. So, all right. So the ETF, which is only 29 basis points for a smart beta strategy, I would say that's pretty reasonable. How do you see advisors using this particular product in their asset allocations? Like, what do you think they're going to do?
So that's a great question. I've thought about that a lot. And to answer that question, I look to the future. And I say to myself, long after I'm gone, okay, is this a strategy that can continue to be used by the investment community? Because then you know you've achieved success. And why is it they would continue to use it? Well, I think the reasoning is because it's going to provide them large cap core equity exposure in the form of a better index. And it's also very simplistic.
And but I there think are rules. Like they don't have to rely on based. They don't have to rely on you to make tweaks every day. You guys decided the quantitative
rules. Set it
rules.
And forget it.
Okay. That's very important for advisors, that when they recommend a strategy, it's not a new strategy 6 months later. Because they you know what I mean? So I see what you're saying. So can JOT outlive, God forbid, JOT? So that's the point that you're making.
And I believe that's the way it's designed. My contribution at this point
is handsomeness.
Yeah.
That's do you ever think about like your name is now so fully associated with this because you created it and you're the face of it? You know, there are going to be times when you look like a genius because this thing is crushing the benchmark. And then there are going to be times where it's behind the benchmark. And that's just the reality of like life. Everybody spends time above and below, whether they're quant or whatever. Do you think you're going to, is that going to bother you at all? Or are you going to get too inflated when things are looking great? Like, are you going to be too high on yourself? Have you thought about that?
I absolutely have thought about that. Okay. And I think what would be more troubling is to see an advisor at some point who says to me 3, 4, 5 years from now, hey, I tried to utilize this as a solution in a portfolio and I'm disappointed in it. That would bother me more.
Okay. Like it doesn't do what it's supposed to do. That would bother
right.
you. Okay.
Right.
My friend Meb Faber did a post where he had launched like his, I think not his tail risk strategy, but maybe he launched a tactical asset allocation ETF. And he basically just talked about this idea of like basically the ticker is like a stand-in for like a representation of him. And so some months he's genius, some months he's a moron, and it oscillates back and forth. But you've been doing this a long time. I think you'll weather that. I think you'll be fine. What kind of feedback have you been getting from people in the industry that have seen this so far?
Well, the people that matter, which are investors like yourself, are supportive. They like the fact that it's removing the emotion from the investment process.
Yep.
They like the fact that it's rules-based. And they like the fact that it has the ability in terms of a portfolio solution to make sure that vehicle, which is your portfolio, is staying in the lane and continuing to move forward, not worrying about how fast or how slow they might be going.
Okay. Listen, I love the concept. Whenever we mention ETFs or any kind of investment vehicles on the show, we tell people to go right to the prospectus and do their due diligence and read up on it, the rules, the disclosures. And this is traded NASDAQ, right?
Traded at NASDAQ okay. and on Virtus's website, which is virtus.com. You yep. can get all the information that you need.
Okay, we'll link to that. And everyone go read up on Joe T. And Mr. Joe T, so proud of you, man.